Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
On today's episode of Project Big Screen, we are doing reviews of Obsession, the buzziest new horror movie in the streets right now, and also Guy Ritchie's In the Gray. We are also doing a list of the worst movies by good actors. Okay, welcome to Project Big Screen episode 33. Jeff and Kirk are both out today. Jeff is hosting Surviving Barstool. Make sure to check that out. Kirk is flying back from Family Feud. Make sure to check that out. So today you have Gooch, Clemmer, and myself reviewing Guy Ritchie's In the Gray, as well as Obsession, which is the newest horror craze. And before we start, I do need to address something that I know a lot of our listeners have been worried about. The notorious vagrant known as the PP Poo Poo Man has been arrested on horrifying new charges. And if you follow Lights, Camera, Podcast, one of the first movies we ever reviewed was The Bye Bye Man, and the horrible horror movie that we dubbed the Pee-Pee Poo-Poo Man, who later became a villain for us in the Blacklist lore. So this story kind of stopped me in my tracks. The fact that the Pee-Pee Poo-Poo Man is on the loose in Canada is not good news for us.
And you know, it's strange, Ken Jack, the second he got caught, Jeff's not here.
That's very interesting. And you know what? I texted the story to Trill. He didn't answer.
Huh. Makes you think.
This motherfucker is hunting us down piece by piece. We invented the villain and he came to life. It's unbelievable. The Pee-Pee Poo-Poo Man. But yeah, so we're doing the In the Gray and Obsession. I think it's better just get In the Gray out of the way, I think. You know what I mean? Because In the Gray, I don't think we're going to have, I think, a mountainous to say outside of Guy Ritchie talk for that. So In the Gray, a covert team of elite operatives living in the shadows. They have a ruthless despot that steals a $1 billion fortune. They're sent to take it back. An impossible heist erupts into a deadly game of strategy, deception, and survival. Only an hour and 30, which was nice. Guy Ritchie, who we've talked about, I think, ad nauseum. I'm a big Guy Ritchie fan for the most part, especially his early work. His last decade's been tough. This one stars Henry Cavill, who's been in a lot of his stuff recently. Jake Gyllenhaal, who's in The Covenant, which I think most of us liked 2 years ago now. Rosamund Pike, Eliza Gonzalez, Fisher Stevens, and more. It's box office $3 million this weekend, 46% on Rotten, three stars on Letterboxd. I want to start with you, Gooch, because I know we talk about Guy Ritchie a lot. What do you think of In the Gray?
Yeah, no, this movie is much less interesting to talk about than Guy Ritchie himself and kind of where he's at, because he is just, does he have money problems? Is like where I want to go to, because he is just churning out movie after movie, and there are glimpses in each of these like that they are made by Guy Ritchie, a guy who just is very kinetic, very engaging as a filmmaker. But all these movies feel like he's sleepwalking. He's just absolutely sleepwalking through these things. Same with Jake Gyllenhaal,
my biggest issue.
Who has had the same issue lately, where he's taking on projects that are just very beneath him as a talent, and very beneath him as like a guy who, for the first half of his career, took very interesting choices. Even though he's not my favorite actor, it's just like he had a very clear vision for his career and the people he wanted to work with, and now he's doing things like this.
So he wants to be like an action star in his like late 40s? Like, what are we doing?
It almost feels like he wants to be like a star on streaming. Like, this movie feels like a streaming movie and just in theaters. I'm not sure. this movie does have its moments for sure. Like it does. I think the action kind of carries it at points. Asa Gonzalez being the lead of this movie is a very glaring problem. She is beautiful as they come, but she just does not have the juice as a leading performer. You almost wish by the end Rosamund Pike is in this. Rosamund Pike should have been in that lead role. Like, change that around. This movie jumps like probably 20 points for me, but I'm landing at a 30 right now. Like, I just, and this is like, it's probably better than that, but like, I have to grade it as like a Guy Ritchie movie. Like, he is a better filmmaker than what he's doing. I don't know. This, yeah.
30 out of 100 for Gooch. How about you, Clemmer?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll give it a 41. I don't know. Does it matter? Does anything matter? This movie is like Gooch said, streaming trash. What's her name? Asa Gonzalez? Asa Gonzalez. Yeah. She's now become like the canary in the coal mine for like streaming garbage. Like, oh shit, she's in it. Like, we're fucked. Like, because she's just not good. And this movie's just, sleepwalking is a great way to phrase it, Gooch. Like, there's so much narration in this movie. They literally just explain the plot. There is a scene, I kid you not, where Jake Gyllenhaal just reads off a list of all the things they have in a room for 2 minutes. That's a scene in the movie. Just, we have this, we have this, we have this. And, like, that's how dumb and pointless this movie is. It's all, like, the danger, the risk is always kind of with a wink and a nod. There's never any real stakes. They always, like, they try to make it, like, this Ocean's 11 mentality where they're smarter than everybody else, but, like, doesn't quite work because they don't really seem that smart. It's just aggravating and pointless. And the kind of movie you've seen 10,000 times. Jake Gyllenhaal is quickly having the most disappointing 20s that I can imagine, that I would have imagined for him. I do like him as an actor quite a bit, and I'm just so frustrated with him now. He's like the kid, the honor student that's now getting C-minuses, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing? What's going on? I don't know. 41, I guess. You could say 30. You could say, like I said, this isn't even a movie. It just exists. It's almost like it only exists to rectify boredom. Like, you're at the mall, it's 2 p.m., like, you've already seen every other movie, I guess I'll go see In the Gray, and you waste 2 hours of your time. And then one day in your deathbed, you're like, oh, man, I wish I had those 2 hours back, or an hour and a half. Like, it's purgatory.
Yeah, it's. I wish it was almost like a TNT-level streaming movie, or TNT-level, like, on TV, fuck it, I'll watch it type of movie, but it's just not even that. And to your point about Gyllenhaal, his last few movies, In the Gray, The Bride, woof. Roadhouse, woof. The Covenant, which I think we liked to a degree, but that's, I think, they understood more what it was, at least. Like, this, I think it was trying to be
The Bride something. Was a, taking a shot. I don't mind The Bride as much.
An attempt, yeah, for sure. Like, Ambulance, which I think is, like, fine at best. The Guilty, which is
Ambulance is pretty good.
It's just, it's, but when you but go,
not
you
for
look,
him.
But it's beneath him, for sure. Like, him and Yahya Abdul-Mateen are elevating the fuck out of that movie.
And if you go back, like I guess like almost 15 years ago now, and you watch something like Nightcrawler, you'd be like, oh, this guy's about to go on a tear of like incredible. And he does. He gets like Nocturnal Animals, even like Okja, which I love a lot, and like smaller things like Sisters Brothers, which I also enjoyed. But then like he just, in this last 2020s, like you were saying, Clemmer, it's not been good for him. And so for this movie, I'm not a big fan of it. I think it's a duo of actors that are somehow both miscast. And it's a silly concept that isn't played into hard enough. And it's just not entertaining in the way you want out of Ritchie. And this is where I think we can get more into the Guy Ritchie conversation. And I think I've just come to the realization that Guy Ritchie is like someone in sports who predetermines what they're going to do. Like, they get the ball and they're like, no matter what happens, I'm going to take a 3-point shot from the left side. I do not care what comes to me. I'm going to take this exact shot. I don't care what opportunities present themselves. And sometimes it goes in. You get the gentleman and you're like, whoa, it worked. But a lot of times it's a brick. And you look at what he had available to him, in this case being like some cast members, some the budget, the on-location shooting in cool places. Like, he has this stuff available to him, and you're like, why did you do that instead of doing something else with what was in your pocket, like what you had available to you? And that's what bothers me, too, a lot with Guy Ritchie lately. And what I notice with some of these recent ones specifically is that they feel unrefined. And almost like they were written by like Guy Ritchie AI or whatever, and they were just approved in a single read. And that's what bothers me about this recent run, because what makes his movies tick, his best movies tick, like Lock, Stock, like Snatch, like those movies, what makes those tick is a lot of precision in writing, in editing, in storytelling. And I think that has just been missing from a lot of his work in the last decade, which makes me not want to watch him, because that's his calling card. So like, when you're watching something like Tarantino, like that's what you expect, a tight script. If he's just like slapping his name on shit and it's not working, you're not going to want to watch his movie anymore. So like, take more time, work less on less movies at once, and maybe you'll get more stuff like The Gentlemen and less stuff like The Fountain of Youth. So I'm just, I don't know, where are you guys at with Guy Ritchie?
I mean, yeah, that's basically where I am at. Like he, like I said, there has to be something going on with his like money. Like, cause there's no reason for him to be making this much stuff. Since The Gentlemen, he's made, I think, 8 different projects, basically 1 or 2 a year, which is just an insane pace for a guy who did make a good amount of movies before, but nowhere near that clip. And in this movie, you have, like you said, you have Jake Gyllenhaal, great actor. Henry Cavill, who I don't think is a great actor, but has a certain juice and would fit in well to the earlier Guy Ritchie stuff. And he splits them up for 90% of the runtime, puts them on their own missions. They never really get to be in the same spot. He has Jake Gyllenhaal doing, I don't know what accent. What accent was that?
Weird.
Like, what accent was Jake Gyllenhaal doing? I'm not sure. And then Aiza Gonzalez, like I said, her being the focal point of this movie and the legal, like, the legal, the way the legal system works in this movie.
Yeah. It's,
oh, that's just closed. Oh, that's
just, she's like on an island, just like, the and like the judge is just like,
that's foreclosed.
Yes. Like, yeah. It's oh, like, okay. It moves so fast. I've never seen anything quite like it. Yeah, like, there's just all these decisions he's making, and it feels like, yeah, just the first thing that popped in his head, and he just wrote it down and ran with it. But then you get a line like, it's easier to find a mouse in the house than a gorilla in the villa. Like, that's Guy Ritchie. That's, yes, like, the yes, best part of the movie. That's Guy Ritchie. And it's like, where is that for the rest of the runtime? Where is it?
Exactly. You get, like, the glimpse of it, which is the most frustrating part. It's, like, it's buried there, but, like, in a typical Guy Ritchie script, I feel like he would have, that would be, like, the 80th best line in the movie, because there'd be, he'd refine it over and over and over, and you get a much more polished product. I don't think that's what you get here. And I think we could just go over Guy Ritchie's recent filmography here. The Fountain of Youth with Office Jim and Natalie Portman from last year, which went straight to Apple TV. That was one of the worst movies.
People don't even know it exists.
I did not see this.
One of the fakest movies ever.
It's, directed by Guy Ritchie, starring John Krasinski, big star, not like massive, but big star, mm-hmm, Natalie Portman. Mm-hmm. And it's basically an Indiana Jones like romp. Like, it's an action money adventure. Like, yeah, huge budget. It's just a big nothing burger.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which I like. I would say, like, it's, but it's relative to his other work, it's bad. But, like, and as far as other movies of this genre, I enjoyed it.
Better than this. A lot better than this.
Yes, much better than this. The Covenant, which I think is solid too, but also completely out of his, like, Q zone of, like, crime comedy. Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre.
Oh.
Which got delayed, I think, 18 times by COVID. And yeah, it was horrible. And that was in his, like, in his zone too, crime comedy more. Wrath of Man, which is not good.
Nope.
The Gentleman, which that's, I think, his best he's done in years and years. Aladdin, not great. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, horrible. Man from U.N.C.L.E., I liked.
Oh, I
And then
really
you get
like
to the Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, yeah. But it's just, he's not been there. And he's also been doing a lot of TV stuff, too. Like, yeah. Mobland, I think, is smart. But Young Sherlock, I other people seem to like Young Sherlock. I'm not big into it. But I just think, I would love for him to be more focused. Like, if he's like, I want to make like one movie a year, great, I'd be totally into that. But he shouldn't be making, like, this year he has 2 movies coming out, and I guess over the calendar year, technically, like, within one calendar year, he had 3 movies coming out: Fountain of Youth, In the Grain, Wife and Dog is his next one, with Benedict Cumberbatch and Rosamund Pike. And so I don't know, I like Guy Ritchie.
Get back together with Jason Statham, make one of Statham's like $20 million movies.
That would be fun.
Exactly.
Yes.
Like, make one of those. Like, Statham has, like, become the staple of January.
The beekeeper,
February.
But, like, have it be, I don't know, whatever, the car salesman, and he's out there and he's kicking ass.
If he wrote one of those scripts, I think that would be interesting to me. I think that could get him, like, on the right track.
You know what?
I saw Snatch in the theaters when it came out, and like, I walked out, and it was almost like you bit into like a live wire, right? It was like that exciting. I had seen Lock, Stock. I didn't love it. Saw it in college, so I went and saw Snatch. I completely loved it. It was like, you literally like were like an adrenaline rush. Like you only get from like the really like exciting movies. I feel like a drug addict, because I've been chasing that high for the last 25 years with him, and I've never come close. And like, at this point, like, I think I just need like Guy Ritchie rehab, and like just need to stay away, because I think he's I think he's cooked. I think that whatever magic that I found back in whatever 2001, and I did a rewatch of Snatch a few months ago. I'm like, this is still really good.
Yeah.
It's like, so like, that guy's gone.
No, I think it's part of it. I think you raise a good idea, Gooch. I think maybe he needs to, like, get back to, like, he needs to be put under a very strict budget and forced to improvise and forced to, like, he needs to, like, get back to his roots. Like, he needs to do, like, a Brewster's Million thing. Like, give him, like, a fucking, like, an indie filmmaker's budget and just, like, get you back to what made your brain work. Because these big budgets, I feel like, have almost burned out his brain. Like,
yeah.
He's like, I don't need to really try anymore because I can just pump $200 million into a movie and, like, the machine will make it for me, essentially. The machine of Hollywood will make this movie instead of me having to do it. So, I don't know. I love him. This is not a great movie. I don't know. So, final scores.
What did you give it?
I'm at like a 40. I'm right around you. I'm just all like, right. It's not like an unwatchable movie by any sense. And it has like even Gucci saying, like, you get like a quick Guy Ritchie line every now and then where it's like, oh, yeah, that's what he could do. But it's also just not anywhere close to the standard I think we should have for a director that we've seen do way better. Yeah. So 30 for you, Gooch, 41 for Clemmer, 40 for me. None of us enjoyed it very much. And now we can talk about Obsession. And this movie, I think, is getting... we've talked about this a lot with horror movie hype. This is the genre itself is maybe the singular worst with overhyping projects. Like, the earlier views on horror movies can be, like, the most wrong things. Worse than anything with, like, The Flash or whatever. People will come out of the worst horror movie you've ever seen and say, this is groundbreaking. This is the best thing since Halloween. You'll never see anything like this in theaters for the next 10 years. And that's a dud. It's an absolute dud. So this, when you hear big praise for movies like horror movies now, I'm definitely way more hesitant. I don't know about you guys, but I'm definitely like, all right, see for ourselves here, right? So... Obsession, after breaking the mysterious one-wish willow to win his crush's heart, the hopeless romantic finds himself getting exactly what he asked for and soon discovers some desires come to a dark with a dark, sinister price. Hour 48, directed by Curry Barker, which, by the way, that sounds like a slur.
Curry Barker?
Calling someone a Curry Barker? Like, that sounds like that's a slur, doesn't it?
See, I was thinking it sounds like a college football quarterback.
Curry, but that too. But, like, yeah. I feel like that's something, like, a British guy would call someone in, like, one of those, like, rallies they just did. Like, hey, you fucking Curry Barker. Like, it sounds like a slur. Cast is Michael Johnston, Indy Navarrete, I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Navarrete.
A bunch of other younger actors and actresses as well. And also fucking Andy Richter as well.
So it's weird.
Him and Carmen getting into the film game is so funny.
Yeah. $16 million this week in domestic, really good. 94-94 split on Rotten Tomatoes. Not really split, same score. And 4.2 stars average on Letterboxd. So let's start with you this time, Clemmer, because I think you saw it first, I think, out of all of us. And I'm kind of curious. I don't feel like I've seen you have a lot of super positive things to say about horror movies. So I'm curious.
I think I have. I enjoy horror movies. This is a really good one. This is the second best horror movie of the year so far, if you count 28. Bone Temple. A horror movie.
Man gets skinned alive in that movie.
So I think this is right there. I give this an 82. I like this a lot. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I've seen some talk about, like, kind of internet hype. I've seen it go kind of like way overboard for this movie, and like that shouldn't, like, people are saying like this is like a great, great, great movie. To me, it's not that. It's a monkey paw movie where, you know, be careful what you wish for, but it's done really well. And a big reason why is the great script and direction and just pacing by Barker. Also, this Michael Johnston kid, like, he carries the whole movie. When I say that, I don't mean it's the best performance. The best performance is Navarrete. But, like, this kid is in every frame. And I've never seen him before. And to be in every minute of a major motion picture in one of your first movies that I've seen, that's pretty impressive. And you believe him, and he's a good actor. He never does too much. And because he never does too much, Navarrete is able to kind of like steal the show and go bonkers, and you kind of buy that. I don't know. I really enjoyed this. I love the pacing. I love the story. It's nothing I haven't seen before, but I've never seen it done maybe quite this well.
80 out of 100 for Clemmer. How about you?
82.
Or sorry, 82 out of 100.
Come on, come on.
Don't cheat it, Kenjack.
Sorry. How about you, Gooch?
Yeah, I am. I'm at an 85. I like borderline, like, this was very close to love territory for me. And I was not expecting, I somehow avoided really all the hype with this movie and actually had no fucking idea what it was about until I sat down. And I thought this movie did such a great job on so many fronts. One, the main actor, Tomlinson?
Michael Johnston?
Michael Johnston, sorry. Not Mike Tomlin.
Or LaDainian Tomlinson?
Or LaDainian Tomlinson. Yeah, I thought he was great. It's basically like he looks like a Franco to me. I don't know.
He does.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, man, they invented a new Franco. We lost one, and now we got a new one. I thought he was great. Very hateable as a character. Like, the character he's playing is more or less like kind of an incel, type 2020s, you know, commentary on that guy, the where's my hug guy. I deserve because I'm nice. I deserve a girlfriend. I deserve love because I'm nice to this girl. And I thought he really executed that well of like, you almost want to feel bad for him, but you can't get to that point because you know that deep down, this is really not a good guy. And then I thought Indy Navarrete is fantastic, stealing the show, really. And she steals the show, obviously, with her, like, she's playing almost like a dual performance. But I thought what Curry Barker was doing behind the camera elevates her even further, like playing with the shadows on her face, how he shoots her when she is more or less possessed, was just so great. And you feel so bad for her. She becomes really the emotional center of the movie. I thought she was just so, so good. The only thing really holding it back for me is it kind of needs like one extra because it is just kind of thin on that one Monkey Paw storyline. I think it maybe needed something extra to cut down maybe 10, 15 minutes off the runtime. But other than that, this movie scared the shit out of me. I was
so
very entertained.
Scares.
Really thought about it. Really thought about the main character and how I felt about the girl and kind of everything happening there. So 85 out of 100. I'm excited for Curry Barker's like career. He's already signed up to do that Texas Chainsaw reboot, not the one on TV, the one that's actually going to be a movie. And I think he's got it. Like, he's got a lot of juice. This was really well shot.
Yeah, young guy too, only 26 years old. Wow. Sketch comedy guy down the pipeline of great sketch comedy guys to do horror movies, obviously with Jordan Peele and now Zach Cregger as well. So 82 from Klemmer, 85 from Gooch.
Also, shout out Superman and Lois, which is where I first saw Indy Navarrete. Just, she was
and
great.
The CW
too.
Slop?
Better. She was better than the show. I do like the show, but like she was like, there's other young actors on that show who cannot act. And she was like the only one that could.
So I'm at an 80 out of 100. I think I'd echo a lot of your guys' points too, for sure. I enjoyed it. I think horror is at its best when it is a simple plot that can be interpreted more deeply, but doesn't have to be. I think when the directors trust the actors and when the runtime is tight. And I think that this is 3 for 3 in that regard. Super simple concept. Be careful what you wish for, like you were saying, Klemmer, Monkey Paw. You can apply it how they work it classically, but also to like the modern dating scene, even to like the freaks now using like AI girlfriends and stuff like that. You could apply it to that as well. Curry Barker trusts his actors, specifically Navarrete, who I think had a super heavy load in this movie. Like you were saying, dual performance, definitely not easy, especially when you look at like her filmography is not super deep. Like this is a lot of trust to put into somebody that does not have a super long body of work. And she was incredible in this. And it's a little over an hour and a half. I would say it never lingers too long without a purpose on anything. For sure, right?
The third act doesn't linger too long, but seems to have difficulty resolving certain things.
Sure.
I like the way it ended. I don't mean that.
I really like the ending.
The process of getting there, though, was a little messy. But like it's a horror movie. Like that's how it happened. Like these are, I'm really just like nitpicking. This is a good movie. See this movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, like really, really great.
This is worth watching. This is my top 10 of the year so far this year.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. I think that to the point of like things being overhyped, I don't think this was overhyped at all. I think when people are saying like this is actually like a maybe fresh twist on an older thing, like that's the best way to put it. It's like it feels, even though the general concept is not that unique, it feels really unique and it feels fresh and it feels like a new eye, which is great in horror because I feel like, and I've preached this gospel since the old days of LCP. Like I don't love horror because as a genre in general, it does feel kind of lazy when they're just like, I know I can, a movie studio or like a Blumhouse or like a whatever other, not really Blumhouse because this was a Blumhouse picture. Other studios would be like, I can input $10 million into this, not even give a fuck what goes on in it. Just give a couple of jump scares and it will return me $100 million. It does not matter the quality of the movie. And I don't like that at all. I hate that. So this is definitely more thought put into it, which I enjoy. I appreciate. And I would agree with you guys. Very excited to see what Barker has in store for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is also due for a very solid reboot. And if you can apply any of the lessons learned here to that and take something, again, kind of an older thing, older, in this case, an IP, and like make it fresh, that's great. And we saw it work successfully with another comedian in Halloween, the first reboot that they did with Danny McBride, which was awesome until they kept going and then kind of fell off a lot. But the first one's pretty good, right?
Yeah, no, I like the first one. There's been some good horror movies this year. Like, we got Bone Temple. We have this one. Looking here at my list. Hokum, by the way, is good. I recommend that. Also, like, doesn't rely on jump scares. You have a good lead, Adam Scott. That's worth seeing. Kind of earns everything, gets in the third act. Primate, I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
that came out, obviously, in January. And then even like Faces of Death and Undertone, while I didn't like love them, they were both good movies I recommend.
Yeah, it's completely the genre has completely replaced the middle class of movies. Like the $30 million, $40 million,
yeah.
the $10 to $60 million movie is almost exclusively going to horror now. Like that's where the young filmmakers are going. That's where they can get that budget, and that's where they can get people into theaters.
Yeah.
Like you can really – my theater was full last night. There wasn't an open seat at Lincoln Square. That's crazy for a movie like this. That would have been unthinkable in 2017 when you first started the pod. And I do agree that's – when LCB first started, the horror was in such a different place. Like it's crazy how far it's come in 8 years, 7 years since then. It's insane.
And that's not to say there aren't still a lot of bad horror movies. A lot of the movies,
no,
a lot of the worst movies you see every year.
To what it was, honestly, pre Get Out, like horror was in like a rough spot for a while, and I you could argue it's as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, no,
and you would get like talented filmmakers going. You're right. Like back in the '90s, like talented filmmakers would make like either like Pulp Fiction ripoffs, like when they were just coming up, or like crime movies or dramas or even like rom coms or whatever. Now you're right; they're all just going to horror and doing some pretty interesting things with it.
Yeah,
yeah. Wasn't Lock, Stock a ripoff of Pulp Fiction? Right? Am I crazy about that?
What's that?
Wasn't Lock, Stock originally like a kind of his ripoff of Pulp Fiction or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
I mean they all did. Yeah, and there was all these like crime knockoff. Some worked, most didn't. But yeah, totally. I mean, it only probably got greenlit because of Pulp Fiction. They were greenlighting every crime thing back in the late 90s.
I would say to your point, Clemmer, too, like what I would say back in this is like 2018 or whatever, is that like 10% of horror movies maybe are good and 90% of them are unwatchably bad. But now I think that stuff has shifted. There is definitely like I'd say like 20% good. And now there's like an actual median ground where there's like, oh, this is like a good horror movie. There's something like
even like something like last year, like Hard Eyes, like that wasn't great. But it was like decent, and it was like better than most things that were out like February of 25, like when it's usually a dumping ground. So like I think that's the other thing too, is like horror has remained consistent. Like you pretty much every month of the year, I feel like the last couple of years,
except for October,
right? Of course, except for October, there's been one good horror movie in theaters. Is it great? No, but is it decent? Yeah, and it gives you, hey, that's pretty good to have that consistency. No other genre can say that.
No.
And they help keep theaters afloat too. They make a lot of money.
Oh, they really do.
Even the shitty ones, even the dog shit, they make a lot of money. So 82 from Clemmer, 85 from Gooch, 80 for myself. I think all of us liked it. And I would easily recommend to anybody that wants a horror movie for sure. Like I would say the Bone Temple would be number one. I would agree with you, Clemmer. It would be my number two right now. For sure.
Yeah.
Until Hokum anyway.
I think I gave Bone Temple an 85 as well. So like this is, I mean, very different kinds of like scale and like what they're going for. But man, I saw last night. I haven't stopped. I struggled to go to sleep last night. I was laying next to my girlfriend and I was like, was she going to, I was like, I was a little like side eyeing her the rest of the way home. Like, it's like, what the fuck? The way she moved. I mean, spoiler talk a little bit. The way Indy moved in the movie, like how did they pull that off? And like, was that just her? Like just so physical. Like that was so terrifying when she's just in the room, like, and watching him sleep, like, that initial scare is terrifying.
Faces she was able to make, too, were crazy.
Oh, my God.
I read this cost less than $1 million to make.
Jesus.
Let's see.
That makes sense. I mean, there's, like,
Before promotion, everything. But
there's, like, three locations, four locations,
and all pretty
five
much,
characters.
Except for Andy Richter, all unknown actors, for the most part.
Yeah.
Relatively unknown.
Well, obviously, you need Andy Richter. Yeah, $750,000 to $1 million.
Isn't that incredible?
That's insane.
Insane.
It does not look that way. And if we're talking spoilers, the scene in the car when she bashes the girl's head in with the brick, that was about as jarring a scene as we've had in movies this year.
Yes.
Difficult to pull off, too, on a budget like this. Like, people think, like, oh, it's just a bunch of money. Like, it's really not.
It's really not.
Big scene like that.
No, like, and like, to have it executed that way, I've seen horror movies that cost $80 million to make that don't have a legitimate scene like that in their movie.
Yeah, like... Mm-hmm. Think back to, I mean, just this year, Lee Cronin's The Mummy has a lot of gross out stuff, but it's so unearned. Like, this really earns that scare. Like, Lee Cronin's Mummy has, like, people's skin falling off and shit like that. But it just, you just sit there and you're like, oh, that's gross. Like, that's just gross.
It doesn't bother you like this one does.
Yeah, like this really scared me. Like,
you know what kind of reminded me of was, do you remember in Hereditary, like, when the girl's head gets, like, knocked off? Like, that's what it kind of reminded me of, where it's like, you're like, decently, like, uneasy throughout everything up until that point. But once you hit that point, you're like, oh, like...
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, that was, I think, a very solid horror movie against, and very excited to see what he does with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
This episode of
Hey, LCB listeners, we're going to take a quick break for a message from one of our partners.
Mein Name ist Alexandra und ich habe GoFundMe genutzt, indem ich einen Spendenaufruf darüber gemacht habe für eine Familie. Ich wohne in der Innenstadt von Leipzig und es hat bei uns einen ganz, ganz schlimmen Brand gegeben, Wohnungsbrand, der sich über mehrere Etagen tatsächlich ausbreitete. Wir sind so ein Mehrfamilienblock und mein Freund war derjenige, der gesagt hat, ey, guck mal, hier gibt's ein Portal. GoFundMe heißt das, dann mir angeschaut und das war dann der Startpunkt. Also was ich jetzt natürlich erreichen konnte, die Familie hat jetzt erstmal eine Notunterkunft. Die haben vorher wirklich auch in einem Hotel-Hostel gelebt, sind jetzt seit der letzten Woche in einer vorübergehenden Wohnung, haben jetzt aber die Chance gehabt, wirklich Kinderzimmer zu kaufen.
Starte deinen Spendenaufruf noch heute. In nur wenigen Minuten auf GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com für deinen Spendenaufruf. Dies ist eine bezahlte Anzeige von GoFundMe.
All right, now back to the episode.
Con is going on right now, doing a bunch of screenings of everything. The big one we got a trailer for already was Hope. It's a Korean movie. Follows a police chief who finds that an alien creature has destroyed a remote village. Directed by Na Hong Jin, who did The Wailing. I love The Wailing. I don't know if you've seen it, Gooch. I'm assuming you haven't, Clemmer.
I have not.
Yeah,
but this is his first movie since The Wailing, right? Which is crazy.
I think so. I'd have to double check that. But The Wailing is...
When is this due to come out?
Do we know? I will double check that now. But the Wailing, I would highly, highly, highly recommend. Because it is, as far as like Korean or just foreign horror movies, it's like super unsettling. It is releasing... We don't have a U.S. release date yet, but it does say it's coming out this year in South Korea. So we'll see. It's starring a number of Korean actors. I'm assuming not many people here listening would know, but also Alicia Vikander and Michael Fassbender, husband and wife duo, who I don't know how they got roped into this, but love that. The first reactions I've seen have been very interesting. I've seen people going crazy saying like it's Steven Spielberg dipped in acid. David Elric didn't like it, which he said like, but a couple other random critics here and there are like negative on it and parts of it, I guess like the second half of it. But I would say everyone seems to at least agree that's interesting. And watching that trailer, I loved it. I loved everything about that trailer. That looked great. And I see a sexy lady shooting an M16 with an underslung grenade launcher. It's getting 5 stars. No matter what happens, you're getting 5 stars from me. So very excited for Hope. But what did you guys think of the trailer?
I actually did not see this trailer, but hearing that Alicia Vikander might be in something good, I mean, that makes it move.
Same for me. I'm excited for that. I got to say, too, like, I don't know. Fassbender's become like the anti-Gyllenhaal, like doing things like The Killer, which I actually liked maybe more than most. Black Bag, I thought it was super fun. This looks interesting.
Kneecap.
I didn't see Kneecap.
Oh, you gotta watch Kneecap, man. Very good. It's a musical biopic starring the actual subjects, and it's really fucking well done.
Fascinating.
And it's like about Irish, like, heritage and the face of like British imperialism. It's really,
see, these are like all interesting projects. So Fassbender is, who's always been an intelligent actor, obviously, but like he's doing some really like interesting things that I wish Gyllenhaal was doing, these kind of things. But we've kind of like lost him, and now Fassbender's always an interesting project. So I'm not trying to say he hasn't, but I really kind of love what he's doing in this stage of his career right now.
I mean, he was the PP Poopin Man.
He was.
It all ties back.
Yeah,
he was a snowman. He was in Assassin's Creed, which is also dog shit. But then, like now, this last like that post Jobs run was so bad, and now we're back into like, oh yeah, we're getting good products,
right?
Which is very nice.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm kind of like I'm buying that Fassbender stock right now.
Yeah. I never sold, brother. I was like the second I saw all those dog shit movies, and I'm like, I'm holding.
Yeah, Diamond Hands.
Nothing could make me sell. James Franco got cast in the Rambo prequel. I don't know if this is like his first big project since getting like kind of Turbo canceled, something like that. That which stars Noah Centineo. They're shooting that, I think, out in Thailand right now. But Rambo prequel, Clemmer, I feel like you probably have a bigger affinity to First Blood and all that than maybe we do, since you grew up with like, I'm assuming dad that was like loves it. I would guess.
Yep.
So
yeah, my dad loved First Blood. Didn't love Rambo. So my dad really loved like kind of that story of like that, you know, Vietnam vet. No, my dad did not serve in Vietnam, but they loved the story of just kind of that guy who just like displaced guy. And like, that's why I think like First Blood still works today. Cause like we all can relate to being displaced at some point in our life for whatever reason. When it becomes like the kind of the Rambo and like the mindless action of it all, the mindless killing, which it kind of eventually becomes. And that was just a style in the 80s. Like First Blood feels like a movie from the 70s. Yeah. And Rambo feels like a movie from the 80s. If you ever want to kind of explain what the difference is to someone, like real quick, be like, watch those two movies, now you'll get it. Like, that's the difference between the two decades. And the Rambo-ness kind of lost me too, honestly. But First Blood holds up pretty well, I think.
For sure. Very totally different movie. Very similar kind of to Rocky, where it's like, oh, now we got something, let's turn it into something else.
Yeah,
like,
Rocky IV is very 80s. Rocky 1 and 2 are very 70s. Three is just fun 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's directing this?
This is Jalmari Helander, who's the guy who did Sisu and Sisu 2, which are great movies, by the way. Great action movies, great revenge movies. It's kind of those things like, what do you want out of Rambo character? Because I'm more in the camp of Clemmer, where like the First Blood, I think, is like a fascinating, interesting, cool, like kind of anti-war story in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And then everything after that is kind of like, you know, American propaganda type stuff. And it turns into, you know, him fighting with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan or whatever. That's not real, by the way, but that was great. Whoever did that first Photoshop is great. But yeah, so I think it just depends on what you want out of it. And when I see this cast attached, or when I see this guy attached to it, where it's like we're doing big revenge tales, explosions, fights, him in Vietnam being the hero, that's not super compelling to me. I don't know if that's where they're going to go with it. So it kind of depends, right?
How much meat on the bone is left for the revenge thriller, the John Wick knockoffs? Like how many more of these can we actually do? I feel like there is a diminishing return on these. Like,
I feel like they're forever though. I mean, go back to Death Wish, Charles Bronson. I just feel like they're forever.
But
I'm not happy about it.
But there's a specific style to like the John Wick revenge movies where it's almost just video game. Like it's just mowing down bodies.
Yeah.
Left and right, like nobody. The Sisu movies. I'm blanking on because they all start to run together.
Oh, even the new, you talk about nobody, like even like Normal had some of that too, where like at least for the first half I had a plot, the second half is just mowing down. To me, I'm exhausted with it. Like it's probably not for me. I guess maybe it is for me. I don't, is it for like, I'm an old man, so maybe it is for me. I don't know. Like I'm just out on action, I think, like that kind of action.
Yeah, just
I want more.
Need something new, really, more than anything.
Is it for dads? So maybe it is like for like old guys.
It is for dads, but we have four great John Wick movies that I would say are all four of those John Wick movies are better than any of the knockoffs.
I'm even like the John Wick movies are fine. Like I don't love them.
Honestly, I love them.
You could also say John Wick rips off other stuff too. So I do feel
it's true.
It's just, I would agree with you though, the style, that specific stylized action has been ripped off a million times now. And the execution of how they do this will be everything, right? Like how they actually present it. So it kind of, I think it really depends on what we see there. Disney caught some flack for staging this thing at Galaxy's Edge. I don't know if you guys saw this. They staged this thing at Galaxy's Edge where Pedro Pascal in armor as the Mandalorian revealed himself to a bunch of fans. He's like, comes out at Galaxy's Edge, takes his helmet off, it's me, Pedro Pascal. And everyone and Disney posted like, yeah, look, we surprised all these fans. And it turns out they were actually a bunch of influencers. And it was just like some big promotion for Mandalorian and Grogu. And they're getting kind of fried for that. It was just kind of like a funny little Disney
thing. Where are we with Mandalorian and Grogu? So I'm seeing the box office, like the pre-sales are not ideal.
It's going to flop.
I think it is, right?
It's
not like He-Man flop, but it's going to flop.
Yeah, I mean, it'll, I think, easily be the lowest grossing Star Wars movie.
So this is like, I listened to the BO Boys, and it's a box office podcast, very good. And they were saying, is it more like Solo or more like Rogue One? And one of the guys was like, this is going to do worse than Solo. And I kind of agree.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, just, and this is obviously anecdotal, but you talk to friends, and I have friends with kids, and none of them seem all that interested in going to see this movie or are barely cognizant of the fact that it's coming out. I mean, the big issue is that it's a TV show. It's a TV show turned into a movie, and people are trained to watch Mandalorian on their television screen in their living room. I can't see. And what's been shown doesn't have enough juice to get people to want to see it in the theater instead of just wait for it to hit Disney Plus in 3 months.
So I guess part of the question too is like, what's the most successful TV show turned movies? Is it just Star Trek's? Like what would be the other? It would have to be that, right?
Yeah, and then even with Star Trek, it's hard to say because like they hadn't had a new episode in 10 years when the movie came out, right? You know, in 79. Yeah. So that was like, there was an appetite for that because like you hadn't had this in so long.
MASH, I guess?
Well, MASH is the other way.
Oh.
The movie started the TV show.
I didn't know that, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, there aren't many. I guess, or like Simpsons did okay, right? It's a cartoon, though. It's different. I wonder, too, how many people like watch. Like, okay, so Star Wars, you have to have, I think, a really big net, right? Because these movies cost so much money. You have to get everyone to go see them, pretty much. It has to be like you have to be welcome to everybody. But I feel like when you have Mandalorian on there, that's a hurdle. So if 25% of people that saw Force Awakens had never seen the Mandalorian show, are they now not going to go see this movie because they feel like they don't know what's going on? Is that a block?
I'll be honest. I was a little worried I wouldn't understand what was going on. And I watched all four seasons of this show. Like, I was like, the last season came out, 2 years ago? And there's been, 40 episodes. And over the years, it just kind of runs together. And there's just so much television that it's hard to really keep everything straight in my head.
Like, I'm like a casual, like, I've watched the first season of Mandalorian. I'm like, oh, this is fine. But like, am I going to go in this thing like just completely confused? And if that's the case, that's not good, because there's a lot of people who haven't seen the show.
I do think part of it is just, at least with The Mandalorian or anything Star Wars really, is just like, we have baby Grogu, people with families are going to go to this. Like, this will be the movie that they want to go to, because there's no animated movie that's going to be in the theaters, at least I don't think, this next weekend. So like, this will be the one that they go to if they want to go to a movie theater, turn their kid's brain off for a little while. And they won't care. The kid won't care. They'll look at, haha, baby Yoda ate a cookie, and like, they'll just laugh at that. Yeah. So like, that I think is part of it too.
Yeah. 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 Cheap Detectives is the much better offering.
Yes. I haven't seen. I haven't seen Mandalorian yet.
Yeah, I don't think we can really say much about it yet until tomorrow, Tuesday.
But Cheap Detectives is fantastic. Go see that. That I will say.
Mm-hmm. The Lanterns had a quick teaser yesterday. Nothing crazy. Just getting a quick another glimpse of the powers. I think I'm very excited for that.
Me too.
Aaron Pierre in general. I think just
anybody out on it, it's pretty stupid.
I'm like really excited. Now I'm way more excited for that than I am Supergirl.
Yeah. Mm.
Which, by the way, Supergirl, by the way,
also on Flop Watch.
Point for Chris on that one. That one looks like stinker. It sounds like, I mean, box office wise, stinker. Bomb stinker.
Mm. Yeah, the marketing is not really, it doesn't seem like it's really sticking.
No, it's tough.
Like I said, I don't think it's He-Man bad. But it's funny because like Clayface comes out in the fall. And I think that was smarter. That's a much smaller budget. And I think that actually could end up doing okay.
Yeah, that created like a nice buzz. Like people were really excited for it.
With Supergirl, I feel like I said you cannot have a trailer like that and not have any stars in it. I'm sorry, Jason Momoa as Lobo, like that's not enough. You need to make real money in these movies. Like those movies need to make a lot of money. Like this cost $200 million to make, I saw. I know James Gunn is backing off of that. Like this needs to make $500, $400 million to break even.
I do think to a degree, and I don't think that'll be the case here. As long as the movie's good, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like the box office stuff will be obviously be important for the future of within the genre. But like, I just, as long as the movie is good, and that is, I have somewhat faith in Craig Gillespie on, because like he's been really good on these sort of projects. Like, hey, let me include. He's very similar to James Gunn in that regard too, I would say, stylistically. So I do think that they're a good mesh. Hopefully, it's good. Every time I see a clip of that villain, I don't even remember, like the yellow rat or whatever the fuck his name is. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah. I will say though, I think caring about the box office matters though, because if this bombs, like how much longer is James Gunn there?
I think he's got a long enough leash where this.
I don't know. Even they just had a merger, and
the merger is interesting, but I think DCU being so young, this being the second movie, I think I'm with Ken Jack. As long as it's good, I think that is their obvious first priority, and they'll be happy as long as it creates.
Is it good? Have we heard anything?
No, I don't think it's screened anywhere.
All right.
But if it is good.
I don't know. I hope it's good. I'm rooting for DC.
They want a positive sentiment around the universe.
Yes.
They want people to rely on it being good. And I think James Gunn has delivered that for comic book fans. Like, his name brand has been, listen, you may not love all my stuff, but my comic book stuff, it's good.
Superman was good.
Reliably
good. I like
good.
Superman.
Yeah. He hasn't made a bad superhero movie yet. So that's, I think, part of it too. And or even a bad superhero property, like Peacemaker was awesome too. So
I Tanya a lot. So I like Gillespie.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. James Cameron said he wants to make the next two Avatar films in half the time for 2/3 of the cost. How do you feel, Gooch?
He's always said that. I mean, he always said the technology has to get quicker. But I mean, in theory, that makes sense. Like, it should be quicker by now. Like, the infrastructure is there and things just speed up. Technology catches up. Like, he was just way ahead of the curve in 2012. And I think it's doable. I do think it's doable. I mean, he's a magician.
Would you prefer that to no Avatar movies? You want cheap Avatar movies compared to no Avatar movies?
I don't think they'll be cheap. They won't be cheap looking. I can rely on James Cameron not to put out a cheap looking movie. He would just,
I agree with that.
He would just,
he's
like,
never done that.
He would get $200 million in the hole and be like, no, we just won't release it.
Yeah.
So I do think it'll just, it will look good at the end of the day. Maybe a little shorter is probably what it would be.
An all female expendable spinoff is in the works titled The Expendables. Which sounds like a title we make up. That sounds like something we would make up for a tweet, like completely fictional, but it is apparently real.
Work for Ghostbusters, I'm sure.
They've tried this 100 times. They've tried, like, the all-female ass-kicker team.
Ocean's
like
8, that was good, right?
The 355, like, they've...
Oh, that was a bad movie.
They've tried this formula a lot, and I think the thing is, like, girls don't go out to see those.
Right.
And I think that's the big thing that is maybe misunderstood the studios here, like... Girls don't go to see those movies, and if guys don't go to see them, then you get nobody seeing it. And even if the movie's good, which most of these haven't been good so far, it's just, I don't know what you do here. I don't get what the thinking is here on any element of it. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll be amazing and blow my
mind. No, you're right. Like, what's, I mean, Devil Wears Prada 2 is killing at the box office now. That's what women want to see. Women want to see things that, about things that women like. Women aren't in a rush to go see things about, like, men like. Like men like ass kicking and superheroes, generally speaking, of course. But that's there is some truth in that. I feel like we've kind of, like, I say like woke, but like we've kind of like lost our way with, like, everything has to be for everybody. And it's like no, it doesn't. Like, it's okay for men to like things, and it's okay for women to like things. It's okay. It really is.
It's definitely like a bit of denial for sure, where it's like the people, like, different genders have different preferences.
Yeah,
that shows up, and that's
okay. It really is. It seems like people, like, there's a thing. And I'm sure it's really true in Hollywood, like, where, like, they try to fit everything into, like, a, you know, if there's a square peg, you know, into a round hole, like, they have to fit it. It's like, no, you don't. The square peg can go in the square hole. It's really okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I've seen female ass kicker movies that were sick. Like, Atomic Blonde, I loved.
Yeah, but the femme fatale. Like, it's a one-woman show, usually, for those.
Yeah.
And also, ballerina. Like, when you try to redo the guy thing into the girl thing, especially, like, that just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think it alienates a little bit of both sides.
We should get a Mean Boys movie. We should get the reverse. Yeah. Just a bunch of bullies.
Or like Devil Wears Prada.
It's a middle school lunch table, and they just fucking ruthless.
But that's also like on the other side of that too, is like, it's also a disservice to women, because now that they're gonna say, all right, well, that's the girl movie coming out in the month of whatever. So now, instead of making a movie that women actually want to see about things that women care about, they're forcing this superhero, or they're forcing this action movie down their throat, which they don't want any part of. And, like, women don't get enough movies in the theaters as it is. And that's why you see movies like Devil Wears Prada blow up like that, because there isn't enough movies geared to women.
There's a market for it. I don't think it's the correct application. And then what happens is this movie bombs, and then everyone makes fun of it, and then these actors have to turn off their social media because they're getting shit on. And it's just like, it's a bad experience, I think, for everyone involved. I don't think it's good business. Conan O'Brien officially going to host the Oscars next year. I feel like we kind of knew that for the most part.
Yeah,
it's great. I like this kind of, like, backstage of his career. He's now going to be like I wouldn't mind if he's like the regular Oscar host for the next few years.
Yeah,
I enjoy that.
Very pleasant. It's hard to find a human being that doesn't like Conan O'Brien. But you can't say the same about Kimmel or anybody else that's been unfortunate to do this.
I see some, like, people trying to poo-poo this because I guess Oscar ratings went down again last year. But that's so much more a function of, like, just what the show is. Like,
yeah,
that is so out. Like, people agree he has been a good host. He is the best part of the presentation. But so much of the presentation is out of his control. Like, just the bullshittery of it. Like, it's just not a very well-handled show at a lot of points.
But I wonder if they're going to have a new host when YouTube takes over.
Probably.
Mr. Beast, for sure.
Oh, I'll fucking... I might be done with movies and awards after that.
I'm not joking. In some capacity, Mr. Beast will be involved. Like, there is no, like, maybe not, they won't make him the host the first
You think year. He'll still be kicking by then?
In 2027 or what is it?
Yeah, it's 3 years from now, right?
Or 8?
Shit moves fast. This internet, this YouTube shit moves quick. Think about Ninja, man. Ninja used to be Ninja was Mr. Beast. PewDiePie was Mr. Beast.
But they were tied into games. Mr. Beast is not tied into a specific video
game. Mr. Beast games?
No, but he has the Amazon Beast game. That's his game. That's the only difference there. But yeah, so I'm happy for Conan, but very much dreading the Mr. Beast.
By the way, little Oscar talk, since we're here. Did either of you see Top Gun Maverick for the re-release?
No.
Or Top Gun? So they did a trailer package before. Last trailer before is the Digger trailer.
Oh.
It's a quick teaser, though. Only about 30 seconds of Digger footage, which was incredible. Tom Cruise is fully in makeup doing a southern accent. It looks unbelievable. Looks funny.
I saw a teaser, yeah.
But the it's a full 3-minute trailer. That's the back 30 seconds. The first 2 minutes and 30 seconds is just a Tom Cruise montage of all of his great performances throughout his career. Like, literally 20 different performances shown, just iconic line after iconic line, and then it leads into the Digger trailer. One of the most unbelievable bits in, like, Oscar campaigning I've ever seen. Truly unbelievable. Like, unbelievable. The theater was speechless when it ended. Like, people did not know how to react. It's crazy. It's like a TikTok hype edit of Tom Cruise.
They gave him the Jay Kelly treatment.
It's like Jay Kelly. Yes, it's like end of career montage. And it's kind of like you just have to sit there and be like, wow, I can't believe this guy doesn't have an Oscar.
How much of Far and Away did they use in the clip?
I do think they used one clip from Far and Away.
There you go.
Yes.
Before we get into our list, which I'm not even sure if I mentioned it before, I think we're doing we're doing worst movies that best actors have, the greatest actors have been in. Before that, we can just talk about what we've been watching in physical media. No physical media for me. I'll just say I've been watching Euphoria. Euphoria has been getting better, I think, as the season has gone on. I've turned a page on Sydney Sweeney's performance. I think she's actually, I get it now. And I think it's much better than I thought it was at first. And I like that Sam Levinson has essentially decided, I no longer want to make Euphoria. I want to make a neo-Western. And he took the $300 or $200 million budget that they gave him to finish Euphoria. And he's like, I'm just going to make a neo-Western with all new characters. And he did that. And it looks awesome. And it's pretty compelling. So I'm turned around on Euphoria, even though it's not really Euphoria anymore, I guess.
Never really watched the show, but I've been watching it. My girlfriend watches and I work while it's playing in the background. And I just like look up and Cassie's like 20 feet tall or 100 feet tall. Oh, their titties so out. Good. I'm like, wow. They are doing interesting things. I can see it from the corner of my eye. But yeah. What an unhinged show.
Yeah. What have you been watching, Gooch?
Damn. What did I saw Blue Heron, which is from Sophie Rumvari and one of like the big early year. You know, you always get one of these like dramas earlier in the year that really pops online and pops with, you know, the indie film going community. It was really good. It was I wouldn't say it's like in my top five of the year, but I liked it a lot. It reminded me a lot of After Sun in the best ways. It's like Diet After Sun. And it's a tight 90 minutes, really well acted, and I would say structured in a very cool way. I enjoyed it a lot. If you like that kind of like drama, like that really melodrama, you would like this. Good stuff.
I thought you were about talking about the boy in the Blue Heron at first.
No. When someone first said it to me, I was like, Blue Heron, didn't that come out like 3 years ago? But no, it's live action.
How about you, Clemmer?
So this week on Supercritics, Robbie and I talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, which is the one where turtles go back in time, become samurais. Truly terrible movie. So check that out if you want to see us kind of rip that movie apart. Also, I saw Is God Is, which is a really interesting movie with some really good performances, directed and written by Alicia Harris. It's her first movie. I was really struck by what a good director she is. Like this to me is a movie that I have like in the 70s. So like this isn't a great movie. It's a revenge story. And you know, revenge stories, the first act, you know, why do these people want to exact revenge? Third act is the, you know, does revenge happen or not? And the second act is always kind of drags. It does drag here. But it does have some really interesting stuff to say about violence, about revenge. Is it worth it? When do we lose our souls kind of thing? And the performances are great. Sterling K. Brown, his small role is fantastic. And the two leads, I want to make sure I get their names right because they are fantastic. Carrie Young and Mallory Johnson. I had never seen either of them in a movie before. They play twins who were burned alive by their father. They are fantastic. Really compelling, interesting movie shot brilliantly, I think, by someone who's going to have a really big future.
Love that. We considered doing it for today, but we just want to do one, obviously, a little more fun to talk to dissect Guy Ritchie.
Is the more interesting movie by far, though. If you're looking for something, you know, interesting, you maybe already saw Obsession over the weekend and you got some extra time, go see Is God Is.
All right, so now we're going to do our rankings, which Gooch has all set up. We did the worst movies for great actors. So think about the great actors that you've seen in your lifetime and the horrible movies they've been in. Everyone has stinkers. We've talked about some of the actors just in this episode that have been in plenty of stinkers. So start us out with number 10, the worst movie that a great actor is in.
At number 10, only on one person's list. Since there's only three of us, this will be for the first few. One person's list, but if they're ranked very high, obviously,
right,
they get a little bit of juice. This was on my list. In true Jeff D'Lo fashion, this will curve towards me. As I reveal. just kidding. But my list, I have Robert Pattinson, who has become one of the great actors of all time. There's a few to choose from for me, but I chose Twilight, Breaking Dawn, Part One, the worst of the franchise.
Not Remember Me.
Remember Me is, have you seen Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1?
Fair.
The entirety of Breaking Dawn is a complete fever dream in terms of Kristen Stewart's character, I'm blanking on her name, Bella, getting pregnant and having a prescient daughter who's basically a Leah Atreides, part vampire, comes out of the womb just speaking part English liking. With a CGI face. And there's like
so stupid.
This vampire group that controls the world. It's that franchise gets very unhinged. Like once you get past the sexual tension of the first movie, boy, oh boy, does it just, once you get into the actual vampire lore, it's fucking terrible. So Robert Pattinson clocks in at number 11. His career has thankfully recouped, but it's crazy to think that's where he started, was with these just terrible movies.
It is crazy.
And Kristen Stewart, too, who's like a great actress and filmmaker.
The Pitch Perfect girl.
Oh, yes.
God, help me out.
Anna Kendrick?
Eric Bear. Kendrick was in those movies. Yeah. She's had a nice career.
Taylor Lautner did not recover. He made it the Magnificent Seven, I think. Or Ridiculous Six, sorry. Not good.
At number 9, also only on one person's list. And it's Chris Klimmer's list. And it's at number 4. That's Tom Hanks in a movie I've never heard of, Bonfire of the Vanities.
You've never heard of this?
I've actually never heard of this.
So this is not only Tom Hanks. This is also Morgan Freeman. You could have in here, too.
Okay.
So Bonfire of the Vanities is a Brian De Palma movie made in 1990. Bruce Willis in it, too. Crazy cast. And it's one of the biggest disasters in film history. And it's the most interesting part was he had on set the entire time a New York Times writer. And she wrote a book. I think it's called The Devil's Candy. And it breaks down everything that went wrong with this movie. And it is fascinating. And when I say breaks down everything, I mean talking like Uma Thurman in an audition for this movie. And Tom Hanks was uncomfortable because she was so young. And they had to be like, he wasn't comfortable like working with her. To this movie just being a complete shit show from a script perspective. They couldn't get locations. It is an amazing story. But Bonfire of the Vanities, I did a rewatch because I listened to this podcast about it. So I checked it out again a couple months ago. It's just as bad as I remember it. It's horrible. A truly horrible movie. A must for anyone who loves film. You have to watch this movie because it just shows how miscasting can destroy a movie. Tom Hanks plays a bad guy. It just doesn't work. And check out the book Devil's Candy, too. It's a very interesting read.
Mm-hmm. De Palma, fascinating, fascinating director. Because he'll just go from, like we talked about it, I think, last week, right? Like you go from something like Untouchables to something like Scarface, and then you go from here, which is a bad movie. This movie's a punchline. Like that's the only time I'd ever heard it referenced, even from my parents, was like, oh, it's as bad as like Bonfire with Vanities. And like,
yes,
you go from that, and then like a couple years later, he's doing a Mission Impossible. So like De Palma, one of our most fascinating guys we've ever had.
Without a doubt. Yeah. But if you're younger and you don't really know Bonfire with Vanities, check it out. I think it's free on YouTube. I think that's where I watched the but I would recommend almost reading the book along with it, just so you could really get a good laugh, or maybe see the movie first and read the book. But
that's
the book's very funny, very well written.
I'd say it was a banger. It's free on YouTube.
YouTube does not promote it at all, but they, like, obviously not, this is apparently not a great movie, but YouTube just does have a sneaky great library.
Yeah,
it's great. It's great to be able to watch, even if the movie's like the disaster, it's nice to have that time capsule to be able to go watch some of these things.
Oh, yeah. I got home drunk a few weeks ago and just throwing Surf's Up was just like available to watch. Like,
Surf's Up,
great
like,
movie.
Bonfire of the Vanities is an important movie in film history. Very important movie. So like, I'm glad that people are able to access it.
I will check that out because I love De Palma. Like he is just always interesting.
It's funny because this movie is so terrible, but then he has a great visual eye, and then I'll have a really great shot, and it goes back to being terrible, and you're like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah.
Oh my
god. I gotta watch Untouchables.
At number, where are we at? 8. We have, we just talked about him, Tom Cruise in The Mummy. I had him at number three, not on any of the other lists, but his version of The Mummy.
Good pick.
And he has a few that are real stinkers, but
this
none
is the
of,
worst of them.
None right? of them rise to whiff level like this one did. Massive franchise with a massive movie star launching a massive universe, or what was supposed to be.
It's true.
And just from the first trailer on, it was a complete and total disaster. We talk about it all the time, that first trailer that they uploaded with just the SFX, just the sound effects.
Yeah.
No music, no dialogue, but you could just hear like the like punches, I think was what it was.
Like Tom Cruise screaming. That's all you could hear.
Yes.
it's hilarious.
Just a late accident. Early days of Twitter, and it was up for like – it was up for a while. Like on all their socials. But yeah, Tom Cruise, I mean, one of the great, in my opinion, one of the great actors of all time, and just in a terrible fucking movie. Terrible. Worse than Lee Cronin's The Mummy. Which is
like, bring me back to life, dude. Do you remember that?
What was that?
The end of it. Jake Johnson's like, thanks for bringing me back to life, dude.
Oh my God.
It destroyed her. It destroyed a whole franchise.
Exactly. I
mean, they had a whole plan for these movies.
Yeah, the photo shoot.
Dude, they had like a full photo.
That photo's just the best.
Dude, it's like, and it's talented actors. It's like Javier Bardem, Russell Crowe, like all these dudes, like all yes. like posed up. Like, yeah, we're about to make this big franchise. And holy shit, that was crazy.
Next up, this guy just won an Oscar. And it's always tough. 3-time Oscar winner. Sean Penn in I Am Sam, number two on Ken Jack's list.
Yeah.
Let you take it away.
I mean, the one thing I want to say, something that would get us banned on YouTube, is the line from Tropic Thunder. But I think of whenever I think of this movie is I watched it as a kid and I was like, I think even at, I forget how old I was. My mom was like, yeah, it looks like a goofy little like kids movie, whatever, something like that. And
it's goofy.
It's goofy. It's definitely goofy. I think here's the thing with I Am Sam. Like I think maybe Sean Penn and the people involved, like their heart was maybe in the right place, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're like, hey, let's give like a little something there. Like almost like with The Ringer, right? Like The Ringer is a movie I rewatched recently thinking this is going to be, I remember this being mean.
No, it's not.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
It is super sweet, super nice, super like, I would say inclusive is the wrong word, but it is inclusive of
yes.
Especially these people. So, but then this movie I feel like is in the other end of the spectrum. It not, no pun intended. It is bad. It is a bad, it's a bad movie. And it is a stinker and I think a big stain on Sean Penn's career. I think that he would definitely take back. If he could take back any movie, it would be this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's back to what we were talking earlier almost about the all-female class. Like, do you view these as people? Or do you view them as like chess pieces for internet points and social, like, you know, social justice warrior kind of.
Or award bait back then.
Or, yeah, award bait, obviously, with the 90s, I think, kind of fell into that trap of like.
Do you remember Sia?
Dustin Hoffman and Tom Hanks. And
yes. Play a person with special needs and they'll give you an Oscar nomination.
Sia, I don't know if you remember this, Clemens. She did this movie, I want to say it was called Music.
Oh.
Remember that? She did this movie called Music. It was about like a person with autism making music. Okay. And she cast like a person that didn't have autism to play the person. And which is, I don't think, like an inherently bad thing. But someone tweeted her like, why didn't you cast someone with autism to play this role? And she just tweets back like, did you consider that autistic people are bad actors? And like, it's just like, the movie got, and this is like 2017, 18, like we're getting peak like performative justice stuff.
Yeah,
she got buried for that. Never heard from her again. It was so funny.
Oh, my God. All right. On to number 7. Number 1 on one person's list, but not on anybody else's. That is Michael Caine in Jaws 4. Chris Klimmer, you have him at number 1.
Yeah, and this is, I think, the biggest example of this because he literally missed – he won an Oscar, but he missed the presentation because he was shooting Jaws 4. So what better example for a great actor in a horror movie than Jaws 4? Jaws 4 is so ridiculous. So the shark just follows – Brody's wife around. Like, she ends up moving and the shark, I guess, just goes with Brody's wife wherever she goes. A terrible movie. Michael Caine has the great line about it. He's like,
so
he's
funny.
Like, yeah, I never saw the movie, but my new beach house looks great. You know,
I've never seen the movie. It's apparently terrible, but I've seen the house it built and it's amazing.
That's what it is. Yes. It's a great line. He missed his Oscar. He didn't, you know, he wasn't in person for his Oscar. He was shooting this shit movie, which he did, you know, obviously just for money, but like, and it's just a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. But hey, like, you know, like Ken Jack just had the great quote, like, you know, the house looks nice.
It's like, do you ever see the John Carpenter quote when they ask him about that? They're like, what do you think about all these like Halloween sequels they're doing? He's like, a great thing happens every single time they make one of these movies is I get a big check with my name on it. And it's like, yeah, fair enough.
All right.
Fair enough.
Michael Caine. I feel like you could probably go through his filmography and pick out, because the man just acts and acts and acts.
He
and
does,
acts.
But Jaws 4 is a special kind of bad. I mean, that movie is horrible.
And he had like this, what year was that, 80s?
87. Like 80s?
But then, like, his 70s is so good. Like, so many good movies in his
70s. He won an Oscar in the 80s. Like, he just won. He was doing good stuff.
Yeah.
This movie stinks. And they wanted to legitimize it. You got to remember, Roy Scheider's in the first two, was in the third one. The third one was 3D. Sorry. So how do we get people to come to the fourth one? Well, we got to have an established actor again. We'll give Michael Caine enough money to buy, you know, a gigantic house, and he'll do it.
It's crazy because Jaws 3D was like signing onto it. The money, obviously, the big thing, but like Jaws 3D sucked and was ridiculed. And like,
but you had the 3D element that at least got people in the door. But yeah.
All right, at number five, now we're on multiple people's list. She's number two for me. She's number nine for Ken Jack. She gave one of the great performances of the 21st century, maybe the best according to Kirk Minahan. That's Cate Blanchett, who starred in Tar. And then her follow-up to Tar was Borderlands, a video game movie that I think I gave a 4 out of 100. One of the biggest pieces of shit I've truly ever seen. Like, in terms of big budget movie making, it is fucking terrible. A
couple Oscar winners in that, right? Isn't Jamie Lee Curtis in that?
Yeah, I mean, well, come on. Come on now. Come on now. Cate Blanchett is like maybe the defining actress of the 21st century.
That's very fair.
And the fact that she not only did this video game slop, but did bad video game, like maybe the worst video game slop, like is insane.
Mm-hmm. Insane. Yeah, it's bad. And I feel like they all kind of knew it was going to be bad. Like everyone involved, whether it was like Kevin Hart and like all them too. Like, I feel like they all kind of got that feeling. But the fact that like if you're going to make the big dummy video game movie, I get it. Why would you cast Cate Blanchett in it? Like, why would you bring her in?
She's like, horribly miscast in the movie.
She's like one of the most like elegant, like well-respected prestige actors. Like, why would you cast her in the goofball video game? I don't get it. But
she's got that like Karen haircut. Like, she's got the like the weird like cut on the sides. Like, she definitely drives a Subaru. Like,
loves gardening.
Oh my god, Cate Blanchett. I just really don't know. I know she I think does this stuff just to pay for her like Australian theater company.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? Fair enough.
There's got to be better ways to get that money, girl.
But it was also bad for both sides, which is the more annoying part. Like, I get it for Cate Blanchett's part being like, I want to do this because I make a bunch of money. But also for the Borderlands part, it's not a good fit. So like, that's why it doesn't make sense for really either of them, other than the only winner there is Blanchett money. So
Sense for Jack Black. It made sense for Kevin Hart. Dave Bautista was in it too, right?
Jesus.
Like Ariana Greenblatt. Like all this. Yeah, yes. Perfect. Great. Yeah.
But then Cate Blanchett?
So weird.
Next up, also on Ken Jack and I's list, number three for Ken Jack, although you did just say the whole cast of this movie.
Yeah.
But I had one select person, because I do think they are like a legend. That's Dame Judi Dench in Cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a bad movie. Such an unbelievably bad movie. Like, I don't know like how they didn't scrap it. Like, I don't know. That's one of those movies where, like, I get, like, you have all the investment and everything, but how do you get to final cut of that movie, screen it to people, and, like, how is everybody, like, you cannot release this? It is damaging not only to you as a director, but it's damaging to your studio. It is damaging to everyone involved. And these are all pretty good actors beyond Judi Dench. Like working, like, Idris Elba, whatever. Like, it's damaging to all of you. So that, to me, I still don't get it. What a horrible, horrible movie.
I'm trying to think. Has Tom Hopper done anything since? I'm looking right now.
Yes.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't done a single movie since. He's got a movie in the works, I guess, called Photograph 51, excuse me. But
did he do TV? Am I crazy? Maybe
he's done. No. He hasn't done a single thing since Cats. And this is a guy that had a career before.
Shouldn't release this movie. And it doesn't make sense. It never made sense either. Like, I don't know how many directors could make this a good movie. I don't think it can be a good movie.
King's Speech. And like Les Mis and like and Danish Girl, like those are movies that got award wins, considerations, like, and then Cats literally nuked his career.
And those all make sense. If you're making a adaptation of Les Mis, that adapts to screen perfectly. Cats does not. It never would. It never did. I don't understand any element of the decision making with that. So I don't know. Whatever. But yeah.
Terrible I remember living movie. In New York when Cats was a big thing in the 80s. And yeah. the whole thing was like, they would ask people, like, I think it was even one of their commercials, like, oh, why do you love Cats? Like, I can't explain it. You have to see it. Like, in other words, like, the story is so kind of, and it is, it's like not even a story. Like, you have to go. Like, and because of like that, that should have been like a hurdle. Like, all right, maybe this shouldn't be a movie. Yeah. Like, if you can't explain it, then maybe we shouldn't make it.
Yeah. It's like a fever dream. You need the stage presence for it to work. So, like, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, the fucking Cats, the buttholes, four. Man. They had to CGI out the buttholes.
CGI buttholes.
That's one that could.
That's good stuff.
That's good stuff. That was a cat fart.
Can't eat the cat.
Next up. This one's on Klimmer and Kinjak's list. It's number 4 for Kinjak, number 3 for Klimmer. That is Joaquin Phoenix and Joker Foliadu.
Yeah, let's go.
Foliadudu. Yeah.
You could, I guess, add Lady Gaga. Technically, Lady Gaga's a very good actress. But yeah, this is such a mistake. The idea that they all signed on for this, a movie that the script clearly doesn't have any sort of story or plot or idea. I don't know what anyone involved was thinking.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's so funny, too, listening to some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I think, like, Tim Dillon talked about it while they're...
Yes.
He played with one of the guards,
very funny.
Right?
They played the guards.
Yeah, and he's like, we're sitting there, we're like, what the fuck is going on here? We have no goddamn clue, like, what this is supposed to be. And, man, what an insane pile of shit that was. Consider, like, I was never, like, the number one Joker fan in the world. Like, I know that movie got lauded, and I was like, that's good. Joaquin Phoenix's performance, like, that ratio to the movie quality is insane to me. But, like... I don't understand how it dropped off that hard, other than like intentionally tanking the movie. I don't get it.
I like the first Joker. I would say it's a very good movie. Not great, but very good movie. I thought it was quite good. I liked the hat tip to Scorsese stuff in the 70s. And I don't know. I kind of enjoyed like all of that. I thought it was disturbing and Phoenix was great. And to make this, which is such a 180 from the first one, like you said, unless it's, I keep seeing that they intentionally did this, but like, but then, like, what's the motive? What does that do for anybody? It's so bizarre. Hopefully we get, like, a good book about this in 10 years, because I need an explanation before I die.
I wish they had the Bonfire of the Vanities book for this, like a New York guy's behind.
I wish they did. And that's what makes the Bonfire of the Vanities so special, is you have that independent thought there that's able to chronicle this. I wish we had that for this movie.
You know what I almost wish? I wish every movie with a budget over $200 million had a documentary crew required by, like, SAG or something, where it's like, we are going to film this, and so even if the movie sucks, we get a mega doc out of it. You know what I mean? We get something out of it. I think you should just have a crew filming it just to see the thought process, learn from mistakes, move on.
I would love that.
At number 2, it's number 1 on Ken Jack's list. It's number 1 on my list.
Wow.
Not on Chris Klemmer's list, but I would assume that he probably agrees with this, is Al Pacino in Jack and Jill. Dunkachino himself.
It's fair. I thought about it. I just think it's like such a stupid comedy anyway. Like I feel like it went against a little bit of kind of what we were doing. Like, I mean, I guess Kane knew Jaws 4 sucked too. Yeah, and it's fair. It's fair. No argument here.
It's so bad. And his part is bad, right? The Dunkachino shit. It's terrible.
It's like iconic. It's like spun around so hard now, though. It's so like, it's just unbelievable that he's there and doing that specifically. Like, himself as a Dunkin' Donuts spokesman.
What? Like, I'm not gonna say Pacino is like immune to bad performances. He's had some stinkers for sure.
Oh yeah,
but
a
like
lot of them.
He is. I would say one of the relics of the greatest in New Hollywood, whatever you want to call it. Like, he is one of the great all timers from the 70s, even into the 80s. Like,
he's one of the greatest actors of all time. Period.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the argument he is the greatest actor of all time.
Yeah, you really could.
It's fucking crazy that he was in this movie, number one. And like, it wouldn't be like insane for like some Oscar laureate to want to come and do a comedy, right? That's not, or do a little cameo like Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder. Like, sometimes that works. Like, not that he's a big Oscar laureate, but like a big giant movie star coming to want to do a little comedy cameo, that can work for sure. But this specific one for him was so bad, and the movie around it was even worse. So, oh man, it was bad. So bad.
Terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And then at number 1, this was number 4 on my list, number 11 on Kinjak's, number 2 on Klemmer's. That is Paul Newman in Road to Perdition. I cannot believe it.
You son of a bitch.
Yep.
I will punch you. I
It was number two on mine.
I mean, he's a legend. I can't believe he did that.
I would never do
the
that.
The guy from the ranch dressing? Like, why the fuck would he do the Road to Perdition?
His final performance and he goes out on a fart like that.
No. It's a great, it's a beautiful performance in a stunning movie.
You know what it's like? It's almost like Gene Hackman in Welcome to Mooseport. That's what Mount Newman and Road to Perdition.
No. Everyone knows Road to Perdition is a very good movie. A great movie.
Okay, well, this was number four on my list, number 11 on Kinjax, number two on Klimmer's. This is George Clooney in Batman and Robin. All three lists. Only one to be on all three lists, and I think very deserving. God, it's shocking it didn't kill his career, because it was still early for him.
I know.
In terms of movies, like, yes. Very early for him, and it's crazy that he was able to even claw out of there.
They all kind of did. Like, Uma Thurman got out of it with Kill Bill. I mean, Arnold was on the tail end anyway. Yeah. Chris O'Donnell was going to be Chris O'Donnell, like CBS Chris O'Donnell anyway. Like, that was inevitable. But they all kind of survived.
Alicia Silverstone.
Alicia Silverstone didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she might have been cooked anyway. Because she's like, Clueless? She's so bad in that movie.
Was Clueless after that?
Clueless before that.
Before that, sorry.
Yeah. This was like the follow-up to Clueless for her.
Gotcha.
This came out in 97. Woof. Yeah, this is horrible. I mean, it's a horrible movie. Joel Schumacher, I guess, really never recovered.
That too.
Right? Did he ever do anything major again? They ever gave him like real money? I know he did movies, but I don't know if they ever gave him like a real money again. Could be wrong. Clooney, like, it's not Clooney's fault, obviously. And I think people understood that. And when this came out, he was so good on ER and he was so beloved by people that he was able to survive it. But it was closer. It was close, I think.
So after Batman Forever, A Time to Kill, which is like the same year, I guess. So
same year, yeah.
Which was
kind of well received, which I don't think is a good movie.
Oh, Phone Booth. I like Phone Booth. I like Phone Booth. I wouldn't call that some big recovery for him at all.
Phone Booth's a good movie.
Phantom of the Opera with Gerard Butler. Forgot about that. Forgot he did that.
So they gave him some money again then.
The number 23 bad movie, Jim Carrey, horror movie. Remember that one? Yeah, and just not a lot of not.
That might be Jim Carrey. That might be like if we had to do this for Jim Carrey, I'd put that one on there, I think.
True. Or House of Cards, he did a couple episodes. So, good for him. Right before, I think he passed out that one.
Yeah, he's dead now. George Clooney, yeah. The ER thing saved him, I think. He was so beloved in that character.
That's fair.
Ross.
The movie was so bad, too. Oh, it's crazy.
Brutal.
It's great. And almost, to a degree, for Schwarzenegger, who was at the end of his career, he's just like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to be governor now. I'm done with acting. I'm going to do Devil's Advocate and then go be the governor. For a while. It's unbelievable for him. But yeah, so our full list, number 10, Twilight Breaking Dawn, Pattinson for Gooch, Bonfire of the Vanities for Tom Hanks for Clemmer.
And Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, and Morgan Freeman. The Mummy for Tom Cruise from Gooch. I Am Sam for Sean Penn for me. Jaws 4, Michael Caine for Clemmer. Borderlands for Cate Blanchett for both myself and Gooch. Cats. For me, the entire cast, but I would agree. Dame Judi Dench was definitely the most affected here for both me and Gooch. Joker 2, Foie Ledoux for Joaquin Phoenix for both Clemmer and myself. Jack and Jill for myself and Gooch with obviously Al Pacino. And then Batman and Robin, George Clooney, all three of us. Man, what a horrible, horrible, horrible movie. So bad.
I'm surprised you guys didn't have Aloha in there because I had that on my list. I thought for sure you guys would too. With Emma Stone.
I pick Aloha or do I pick Burnt? Like...
I just think of Aloha where she's playing Hawaiian person. It's so funny.
So we maybe do some of the ones left off your list. Clemmer, what were some that maybe got off yours?
Oh, let me find it here. Sorry.
If you want to see the full list, each of our full lists, I'm going to start doing this. It's going to be on the YouTube screen. It's on the video. If you want to see it, you won't go watch it. You don't want to see our list, bitch. You won't click on the YouTube link in this description and go give us a view. Maybe subscribe if you haven't already.
Give it a try.
Speed 2, Sandra Bullock.
Oof.
I have The Babe, John Goodman, Richard Dreyfuss, and Poseidon. I think Poseidon's terrible. William Hurt was in a movie called The King's Daughter, which was so bad they shelved it, and I think they released it after he died. And it had been shelved for like 4 years. He did it like 4 years earlier. Those are a few. Morbius with Michael Keaton, although his part wasn't huge in that, but that movie's so bad. And my last on my list, Lupita Nyong'o. Quiet Place Day One.
I thought that was fucking insane, to be honest.
I hate that fucking movie. That fucking cat.
I don't like the movie either. I don't think that was like a bad movie.
Oh, that movie sucks.
Not on the level of like Jack and Jill.
It was 15th. It was 15th on my list. I just think Jack and Jill's supposed to be stupid. So it's hard for me to be like...
You know what's one I felt very strongly about?
It's not.
But like Duncan Chino does make me laugh. Like on some level, it's like funny.
So,
like that's funny.
There is one I feel very strongly.
It's so stupid.
There's one I feel very strongly about, and I'm curious if you guys agree. It was my number 15, which was Melissa McCarthy in anything that her husband was involved in, period. And Melissa McCarthy, when you watch something like Can You Ever Forgive Me, you're like, holy shit, Melissa McCarthy can act. And then she's in like Thunder Fart 4 because her husband is a producer on it. And everything that her husband produces is shit. It is shit, and she is in it, and it is always garbage. Fucking Happy Time Murderers, Thunder Force, like all Jexy or whatever, that was the AI House one, like, they're all bad. It's unbelievable how many bad movies that he has forced her to be in.
I think she
pisses me off.
I'm down on Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah. Also, Margot Robbie, Suicide Squad. Bleh.
Tough.
But she's, man, she's got some real stink. You go through her filmography, it's littered with
Lateral
some...
Beauty. Yeah. Patrick Stewart in Emoji Movie. Also, that's an OG LCP review. That was a really bad one. Robin Williams and Jack. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think he's in. Jack is so bad. Bill Cosby plays the pediatrician, which is just bizarre to watch that scene unfold. Jack's bad. Francis Ford Coppola directed it. Jack is bad. Robin Williams has been in some stinkers, but Jack might be the most uncomfortable watch.
That is definitely, I would say, his worst movie, but I think also part of it, too, is like, I think he is phenomenal in Good Will Hunting. How many other performances are even close to that level for Robin Williams movie-wise?
Good Morning Vietnam, he's really good. Insomnia,
I really like that.
Insomnia, he's really good.
Insomnia, I always liked, but like that's the... I appreciate him getting out of type at least, yeah. No.
I had one from last year, and then I'll kind of sign off on it, but Denzel in Highest to Lowest.
Highest to Lowest, I thought about it.
Was... Every time I think about that movie, I'm like, how the fuck did Spike Lee make that piece of shit? I think it's his worst movie.
Yeah, I would say...
Is that worse than Flight? See, I almost put him on for Flight. I hate Flight.
Nah, but he's doing, like, Flight, it has an entertaining quality to it for me.
Yeah.
Flight's gross.
Like, watching him just be fucked up the whole time, just kind of...
Robert
De Niro. Honestly, you could say the same thing with Gladiator 2, to tell the truth. Like, he picked some bad movies the last couple years.
Yeah, but I mean, dude, Highest to Lowest, man.
But he's still good in it. That's the annoying part.
Last year, too, Captain America 4. Like,
I thought people would have De Niro for Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I had it.
Yeah,
I feel like that's kind of like one of the go-tos. I just hadn't seen the movie.
I unfortunately did love that movie as a child, so
did you?
I can't bring myself to hate it as an adult.
I only watched it as an adult, so my perception was skewed.
I've never seen it, so I didn't want to put it on the list.
Anthony Hopkins, Transformers The Last Night, another LCP classic. That was an all-time bad movie.
Just sounds funny.
He plays like a British guy that runs like these like British Transformers on an estate, and like they're like World War One tanks that turn into Transformers, and like they're isn't it like he has a robot Transformer servant named Cogsworth?
Yep.
It's so or something like that. It's so stupid.
Can you imagine Anthony Hopkins like so they mail him that script? Imagine him reading that script and being like, you know what? I will do this.
I'm
like,
in.
What? How does that happen?
His death in that movie too is fucking hilarious. Like clearly not on the set. Like he's like a PNG that gets blown up.
It reminds me of do you ever see the clip of like I think it's Bob Hoskins being interviewed on Mario and Luigi?
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, I was King Lear. And like now I'm playing fucking Mario.
Oh, that movie stinks.
That's a really that could have been on this list too for Bob Hoskins, but like Bob Hoskins, like how high do you rank?
I had the same thing with Dennis Hopper too, because like Dennis Hopper is a very good actor, but like is he a great actor? But I was looking at the movie poster, but it says this ain't no game, and it's like no, that's wrong. With people like the game. Like, look at how the ones marketed now; it's all about the game. But literally, the tagline was this ain't no game. It's like that's the worst way to market Mario.
So one thing we want. Okay, so that's our list. Next week will obviously be Jack Ryan, Ghost War. Nothing else coming out to worry about. So make sure you check out Office Jim and Jack. No, I'm not actually. Don't actually review that. Mandalorian and Grogu. And probably I Love Boosters, I assume, as well.
Yeah, other one is A Passenger. It's a horror movie.
Yes, which looks interesting.
But I think I Love Boosters is probably the more interesting movie.
For sure.
Yeah, and obviously Mandalorian and Grogu. I will be in Italy, but I will give my Mandalorian review to, I believe, Jeff to give to you guys. So I will not be on the next week, but make sure to check that one out. But until then, we will see you guys next week.